You're listening to Pull the Line, a tattooer-created podcast about respect and tradition.
Welcome back to Pull the Line, a tattooer-created podcast about respect and tradition. I'm Michael. I'm joined by my co-host, Rich, today. Our co-host, Lisa, unfortunately, is out on this episode. And today, we are sitting down with Professor Nicholas D. York. Nick, thank you for taking the time to sit down with us. Appreciate it.
Oh, of course, of course.
So I guess just to cut right to it, how old are you? How long have you been tattooing, and how did you discover tattooing?
I am 27 right now. I have been tattooing for 12 years and some change. And I started getting tattooed when I was 14, maybe 15. And I was watching the people do the tattoos on me. And that was kind of my first like introduction into the thought of like, you know, doing them and like all that fun stuff.
Wow. 14.
Yeah, I can't remember exactly. I was either late 14, early 15, but one of those. So I started doing tattoos when I was 15, though, in 2011.
What what inspired you to tattoo? What did you just saw what was going on? And
you know, it's tough. I feel so like, you know, obviously just growing up in Texas, you always see kind of tattoos everywhere. There's a big tattoo scene here. So like my mom had tattoos and stuff. And, you know, my dad's actually a tattoo artist. So I would always hear kind of from throughout, you know, stories of him tattooing, but I didn't really grow up with him. But it really more or less, Jesus, I got sidetracked. I was watching the people do them on me, and I was like, that seems like something I could do. Like, that seems pretty simple. And I was wrong. It was actually really fucking difficult to get into. But it's all good. I figured it out, and I was able to get to doing it.
Did you have, like, a formal tattoo apprenticeship?
No, I did not. I have gone through technically three, but I never finished any of them. Yeah, that was like a big point of contention for my early career because I was an apprentice and I used to catch a lot of flack for that. Nowadays, it seems to be less of a deal, but back when I first started tattooing, and this isn't even that long ago, this is only 2011, not having an apprenticeship was a really big deal. And it really mattered to a lot of people versus nowadays, a lot of tattoo artists, it doesn't necessarily matter if you were apprenticed or not. You know, people are just like, whatever, like, as long as you do good tattoos. But, yeah, like I said, I never finished any of my apprenticeships. I quit the first one, got fired from the second one, and then I had a third one, which was more or less kind of like a fake apprenticeship. It wasn't, like, real. It was just like a, hey, we're going to say we're apprenticing you just so, you know, people can stop giving you shit. But I don't know. I got to a certain point where I don't even care.
Yeah. That seems like the homie move. That's tight, though. I mean, okay. So when did you have your first one? How far into tattooing were you at that point?
I had been tattooing for like a month and a half. And, I actually got offered the apprenticeship at the mall after meeting the guy that had offered it to me, you know, maybe for like 5 minutes. And I was 15 and I, like I said, just started tattooing. And it was at a tattoo shop in Fort Worth called Psycho Clown Tattoo. The owner, Jared, offered it to me after, you know, knowing him for like 10 minutes at the mall. And I worked there for a couple months, but the problem was I didn't have a car and I lived about an hour away from the shop. So I was trading tattoos for rides up there because they were letting me actually tattoo, even though I was, you know, still pretty new. So I would just like tattoo my friends and shit. But I had to quit that because I just couldn't keep getting rides. And yeah, so that's how that one came to a close.
I see. Okay. It's funny. I remember when I had first gotten my apprenticeship, I was in a similar place where like I wasn't able to like get back and forth because I lived across town. I didn't have a car. I was only whatever, 19 or something like that. And I ended up bunking in the tattoo shop with my mentor, who also didn't have anywhere to stay and also didn't have a way of getting around. That made for some interesting memories, sleeping in a fucking haunted tattoo shop.
Yeah, no, I was also going to high school at this time. So this was prior to me dropping out. So not only was I trying to juggle an apprenticeship, I was in ninth grade. I was a freshman in high school at this point. So I was still like juggling like algebra class.
Yeah. This kind of goes to show like both of you how bad you wanted it though, what you were willing to do and what the shit you were willing to go through. I respect that immensely.
Yeah. Yeah, balancing school on top of that, that's a crazy dynamic.
I ended up dropping out of school to pursue tattooing because I got a job offer at this one tattoo shop, just like maybe 45 minutes east of Dallas, in a little town called Greenville, Texas. And at this point, I was 16 and I had been tattooing for a year and some change. And I was guest spotting at this shop over the weekends. So I would go to high school during the week. And then on Friday night after school, I would have my mom drive me to the tattoo shop. And I would tattoo there over the weekend, and I would stay with my boss, and I would just crash on his couch for the weekend and then make my money and then go back to school on Monday. And I did that for a couple weeks until finally he was like, hey, you can just like, you should work full time here. And he gave me a schedule, and I was like, I can't do this. I go to school. And he's like, okay, well, we'll just find someone else. And I was like, hold up. And I dropped out of school and I worked at that shop because I was actually making good money there. Definitely the most money I'd ever made up until that point. There's a lot of walk-ins at that shop. But I only worked there for a couple months. Me and the owner's wife didn't see eye to eye on some things. She wouldn't let me do script tattoos near the end of my tenure there because I guess I fucked up a script tattoo. And she was like, no more script tattoos for you. And I was like, okay, well, fuck this. I'm not going to be told what I can and can't do. You know, just typical 16-year-old kid, like, mentality. Like, oh, fuck you. You can't tell me what to do. And so I quit.
That's fucking punk rock, though. I mean, the dropping out of school thing. I think that's fucking, that's tight. I dropped out of high school, too. So I think it's, I'm team fuck school.
Hashtag team fuck school.
on the note of you mentioning like the typical like 16-year-old mentality kind of deal, do you think and this is just you mentioning it made me think to ask this question, do you see her feeling that way about what you did as like do you see it differently now that you're older and you've been tattooing for a while and can look in retrospect?
So I think the way she went about it was maybe a little whack or unprofessional. I mean, it's a shop that hires 16-year-old kids. How professional do you think that can be, you know?
Yeah.
That's fair.
Be 18 to get tattooed in Texas. So I wanted to get tattooed by the owner, but I literally couldn't because I wasn't legally old enough. But I did like some cursive going down the back of this dude's arm, and each letter, it was like, you know, let's say it was like, the name was like Chad. So C-H-A-D, and it was all cursive letters. Well, I guess when you take cursive and you try to line it up in a row like that, it doesn't really always transfer very well. Cursive is just kind of a pain in the ass like that. So anyways, one of the letters was actually like slightly like off. Like the center point of the letter wasn't where the center point of the rest of the letter was. And I did it. And honestly, the guy was happy with it. Like everything was cool. Then the next day I come into work and I see the not the stencil, but the purple carbon paper that was left over from making the stencil, like pinned to the board. And there was like a little sticky note that said, "Whoever did this tattoo, come talk to me, Brandy." And I was like, "Oh fuck, that was a tattoo I did. Like, it was like the last one I did of the night." So I go and talk to her. And to be fair, the tattoo actually did look really crooked on the stencil. Like when I tattooed it, I don't remember the letters being that like out of whack. But anyways, I spoke to Brandy and she was like, "No more script for you. If this is what this is like, you look at this and you don't see a fucking problem with this, and you don't need to be doing script here." And I was just like, "Fuck you and fuck this," and I was out. So, yeah. Fun stuff.
What a missed opportunity for a teachable moment. How long were you tattooing when that happened? Like relatively new, still, right?
Yeah, I had been tattooed for maybe a year at that point.
That's still pretty new, you know.
Yeah,
you could totally use that as a teachable moment. Like, okay, this is how you should do it, instead of like, you know, ultimatum bullshit.
Yeah, but banning you from script, right? Which, what the fuck? What kind of rule is that? Don't do script. I mean, I would have jumped over the moon because I fucking hate letters and I hate cursive. But
yeah, well, that's the problem. Is Brandy? She wasn't a tattoo artist. She was just married to the owner, Big Earn, and you know, I don't have an issue with Brandy anymore. Like in that moment, I was very upset. But since then, you know, we've kind of, you know, this was like, you know, going on so many years ago. So it's just like, what can you do?
Yeah, totally. I mean, I guess I'm just curious because like there's a lot of stuff from my apprenticeship that I remember with my mentor, where at the time I felt very like, well, how does this have anything to do with being a tattooer, you know, being, you know, not really humbled the most yet. And in retrospect, looking at it, I'm like, okay, I get it now. I understand. I get why you felt that way. But yeah, well, just something I was curious about. But obviously, so coming into tattooing, a big thing for you was not having, you know, a proper apprenticeship. What other kind of obstacles did you initially face when you first like got into tattooing?
You know, I was catching a lot of shit because I was young. So like I said, I was 15 and 16 in the early part of my career. So, you know, one of the first things, I had never actually set foot into a tattoo shop before I bought my tattoo kit and I was tattooing on my friends. And I remember I bought a tattoo kit. I think I ran out of the needles because, you know, it only comes with so many needles. And the first thing I did was like, oh, I'll just go to the tattoo shop down the road and buy some more needles, because that's how like shit is in the rest of the world. You know, like tattooing is one of the few industries where a lot of its tools are not open for public sale, but a 15-year-old kid doesn't fucking know that, especially when I was able to buy the tools off eBay. So I thought it was just something you could just go in and restock at the tattoo shop and everybody would be cool. So I go in there and I'm like, oh, hey, I need this stuff. And they're like, no, you fuck, what the fuck are you talking about? And I was like, oh, I tattoo. And they're like, no, you don't, like, you need an apprenticeship. And I was like, what the fuck is an apprenticeship? Like, literally, I had not heard the word. I didn't know what that meant. And they were like, so they had to teach me the concept of what an apprenticeship even was, let alone a tattoo apprenticeship. And then I was like, oh, well, can I have an apprenticeship? And they were like, no, dude. Like, and it's like, well, yeah, like, dude, I'm like fucking 15. They're like, you can't get an apprenticeship until you're like at least 18. Like, nobody's gonna apprentice you. And I was like, dude, I just bought an $80 tattoo kit. What am I supposed to do? And they're like, just stop tattooing. And then when you're 18, come get an apprenticeship. I don't know what fucking idiot thought a 15-year-old kid was going to listen to that piece of advice. But anyways, I didn't.
Didn't work. Just,
okay, well, fuck you, dude. I'll just go to the gas pipe and buy the needles. And that's what I did. And yeah, so it's just been that. But yeah, early on, dude, I caught a lot of flack for just being young in general, you know, set aside the not even being apprentice. So like, that was kind of a fun little thing. And I was pretty vocal and pretty loud about my tattooing. I didn't keep it secret or quiet. If you met me, I was like, oh, I'm Nick. I do tattoos. Let me know if you want to get tattooed. Because I was trying to fucking tattoo anybody and everybody. And I had no shame in it. And the concept of what I was doing not being good didn't exist to me. Like, here's a funny little story. At this time, I was getting my sleeve tattooed by this dude that also tattooed out of his house. But prior to tattooing out of his house, he actually worked at a tattoo shop in Deep Ellum. And when he was working at the shop, you know, he just had an issue. And then he went and started tattooing out of his house and, you know, worked in his garage. Anyways, when I was getting tattooed by him, I had just started tattooing. And I was like kind of telling him about my, you know, how I had just started. And he was like, oh, so you're like a scratcher. And I was like, what's that? And he's like, that's what you are. It's somebody that like tattooed unprofessionally. I was so naive. I was like, okay, yeah, I guess I'm a scratcher. I thought that was just like the name. I didn't know that was like a derogatory term. I literally thought that was like what just tattoo artists that didn't work at shops were called. And they like proudly identified with that. So there was like a good month period where I was like, oh yeah, I'm a scratcher. Cause I didn't fucking know that that was not a good thing until I got told otherwise.
What's up, my fellow scratchers?
I wasn't a dumb kid, but tattooing, it really is its own like little secret society world, especially, you know, this was at the cusp of, you know, so this is 2011. This is right at the cusp of the internet age in tattooing. I mean, Ink Master had just started to take off. And it was at this weird transition between television tattooing and internet tattooing. And I got in right kind of when those two intersections were crossing.
Yeah. Yeah, that has to be a wild time to...
I don't know if I'd beat yourself up about that. You were 15.
Like, yeah.
You were still a kid. You know, I appreciate the cojones you took to be like fuck, oh yeah, I'm a scratcher, like fuck it, I'm gonna do it. I love that. I think that's so cool. It's like, it sounds kind of cheesy, but for me, that's like the essence of what tattoo artists are. They're like, you know, society, fuck you, I want to do this, I'm gonna do it.
Yeah,
I like that. You know, at least that's what it was like when I first started. Now things are a little bit different, but I respect your willingness to say and do what you want to do. I dig that shit a lot, actually.
I think I just did it like that because I didn't know any better. And I was, like I said, I was a particularly, what is the word? I was a particularly aggressive younger kid. And if you told me not to do something, the first thing I was going to go do was do that thing. Cause I just had, I've always had like a fuck you kind of like punk rock authority issue mentality. And so all those tattoo artists that were like, you shouldn't be tattooing. I was like, I'm just going to do it to spite you now. Cause I don't like you. And I want to do something that makes you upset. I guess you could still kind of see that in my modern day, evolution.
I could see that. I respect that. I love that attitude. I remember there was another apprentice at the shop that I started at, who had been through like an apprenticeship or two before then. And he was kind of aggressive. And I remember him telling me one day, like, you know, everybody would always ask me like, well, why do you want a tattoo? And they would like gauge where I was at by my answer. And I remember it hit me one day where I was like, I don't fucking need to explain anything to you. It's none of your fucking business why I want a tattoo or how I tattoo. And, you know, it at the time, you know, this frame of mind is coming from an apprentice towards another apprentice who, you know, kind of felt had some seniority over me. And I remember just kind of the how liberating that felt at the time of just like, dude, fucking eat a dick. I don't care what you think of me, I'm just going to do what I do and do my thing.
Yeah, it's so like we're on the level. Why are you trying to pull rank?
Yeah. Yeah.
I think a lot of... Oh, go ahead.
I was just going to say, I came up in like an apprentice puppy mill. So it was... ethics were being thrown around in different windows or out different windows, you know, a lot. So,
yeah.
Well, I technically had a 2-day apprenticeship.
Really?
Back in 92. So I didn't have an official apprenticeship even like, and back then it really was frowned upon, but I same thing with your attitude. I wanted to do it so bad. I just fucking did it. Yeah. You know, I got tattooed a lot and I paid attention. You know, and I'm a visual learner, so I kind of figured things out while getting tattooed. So I went down to a guy named Doc Finn in Elgin, Illinois for a weekend. He invited me down and he showed me how to make, this is back when you had to make your own needles and shit. You couldn't just buy them pre-made because I'm fucking ancient. But yeah, this is when mags first started becoming a thing. He taught me how to make mags, which was like, you know, golden information back then, you know, so I can appreciate, like I said, I can appreciate your willingness to be like, you know what? Fuck you. I'm doing it. You tell me I can't do it, I'm going to do it even more just to show you I can.
Yeah.
I love that attitude. I love that outlook because so many people, so many really talented people listen to those people and they'd never, ever, ever do what they want to do. You know, I see photos of your stuff, Nick. And I feel like you're living your dream. I'm living my dream. You know, I've had a damn good life because I said fuck you at an early age. And I respect the shit out of that. So kudos to you.
Yeah, it's been cool, man. Like everything tattooing has done for me and given me. And, you know, I recently did like a tour around the country all of September, and I worked with a bunch of really great artists, you know, people that I really looked up to, you know, Theo Mandel or like Mike Rubendahl, you know, even like newer guys that are peers of mine that I still look up to, like my buddy Justin. He tattoos at Curio Tattoo in Richmond. But I was walking with a buddy of mine who tattoos here in Texas, and he had said something that was very interesting to me. He was like, he told me that for the longest time, he didn't think I took tattooing very seriously. And that he only knows otherwise because other people told him that I do indeed actually take tattooing seriously. But he was like, yeah, man, looking at how you are online and looking at everything, one would think that you don't take this shit seriously at all. And I think that was a very interesting kind of thing that he had said. It had never like occurred to me whether or not, you know, how serious I took the craft of tattooing was ever into question, because I feel like almost everything I do besides my stupid shenanigans, it shows how much respect and serious I do take this craft, from, you know, the history stuff to, you know, preserving these old designs, to even like tattooing in a way that I do tattoo. So I was kind of like taken aback by that, to be like, wow, it's crazy to think that people look at all this and think that I'm just making a big goof out of all of it. And my rebuttal to it was, it's not that I don't take the craft of tattooing seriously. I don't take the industry of tattooing seriously. Tattooing as an industry is, you know, for lack of better words, a fucking joke in so many ways, you know. And really, it's a new aspect of tattooing. Really, the proper industry of tattooing really didn't even come about until like the late 1800s. And even then, the industry was really such in its infantile stage. But as far as the craft goes, you know, I respect the hell out of it. And it's like, it's done me really well. And it's granted me a life that I would have never been able to have if I would have stayed in high school. So I want to do whatever I can to preserve it and respect it. And in my weird, funny way of doing that, whether it be, you know, making a book about tattoo history, you know, or you know, holding on to these old ancient artifacts that need to be kept in safe hands. But I think a lot of people get mixed up in like kind of the online persona, and they're like, they kind of see me making a goof out of shit, and they're like, oh, he doesn't respect tattooing. And it's like, not quite.
Well, my perspective, being a, you know, an old timer, I don't know if I can call myself that yet, is that one of the things that I loved about tattooing when I was a kid were the characters, were the people that were eccentric, that the big personalities. And God, you're nailing it. And I love it, you know. And I think that's what, what's, you know, probably scares other people. Like, you're not taking it seriously just because you're being you. I think it's awesome. But, you know, that's my opinion amongst a gazillion other old timers. But I think it's great, because most people, like, they put headphones in and they don't talk, and they just, yeah, they don't engage. Tattoo artists should be bigger than life and should have, you know, because we don't follow the rules. We don't obey society's normal expectations. So, like, I think not only are you, like, holding on to the tradition stuff, you're living it.
I appreciate it. Like, the way everybody idolizes all these old school tattoo artists, Stoney St. Clair is a perfect example, or like Gus Wagner. And it's like, these guys were weirdos. Particularly Gus Wagner. I never met the guy, obviously, but, you know, from everything I know about him, seeing his body of work, dude was a real eccentric character. And I think the sterilization of tattooers nowadays is really a disservice to, like, what you said, which is one of tattooing's greatest traditions. It's made up of carnies. It's made up of weirdos and rejects and outsiders. And, like, all these old tattoo artists that we love from back in the day, whether it be Armand Dietzel or, you know, fucking Grimshaw, or like any of these other guys, they were all carnival guys. They were all weirdos in their own right, you know? So I, you know, kind of like what you said, when I see a tattoo artist nowadays that is, you know, going out of their way to not fit a mold and to kind of be the weirdo, I look at that as calling back to a tradition of tattooing. And I'm like, dude, I love this. You get it. You understand that tattooing has always kind of been a home for people that are, like, on some weird shit. And for tattoo artists nowadays to, like, to want to, like, this whole, oh, keep your head down, you don't want to stand out too much mentality, I'm like, I don't subscribe to that ideal of tattooing. And I don't know why it's so popular, but that's just me. I mean, people are always gonna want acceptance.
Right. Well, I read about Lyle Tuttle when I was 9, and that's what inspired me to be a tattoo artist. And he was, you know, talk about larger than life. You know, that dude was fucking everywhere, you know, and just, where's I going with this? I just, my train of thought just derailed. Just like him and like Bert and not Bert Grimm, Gil Monty and all those guys are just, you know, just big personalities. And I like that shit. But nowadays it just kind of stinks, because nowadays you really can't be with how, I don't know, I'm going to sound like a fucking boomer, even though I'm not a boomer. So many people are really sensitive, yeah, which is cool to a point, but I don't know. I think you get what I'm saying.
We're on the same page there, it seems like.
Yeah. I feel like there's this very loose grip to have on things when you're a tattooer, because obviously it's important to, like, respect and maintain tradition and pass these things on to people who can very properly carry the torch. And, you know, it's like a topical surgery, so you got to take it seriously. You know, it's a big deal. There are ways of fucking people up pretty bad with a bad tattoo, but, like, the rock star shit, dude, like, I mean, you know, I'm only whatever, almost 4.5, 5 years into tattooing. So I'm pretty new, and I've the last couple of years, I've gotten really familiar with the villain art circuit. I'm going to name drop because I love doing a lot of the villain art shows, specific ones, because I have friends that do them. But there is a lot of fucking rock stars in that scene, bro. Like, there was a dude that I met in Milwaukee who is from Wisconsin, and he, you know, moved out west and got all famous and stuff. And I remember him talking shit about local tattooers being at that show right in front of me after I just met him, after I just told him that I was from the area. And I was like, dude, you and I used to play shows in the same venues before we were tattooers, when I was in high school and when you were an early adult. Like, I don't know if this is like a place where like you belong and I don't, just because I am from the area and I'm not on the road doing fucking tattoos or whatever. I think that that is just such a gross outlook to have on anything, but specifically in tattooing. Like, this was a band of misfits, you know. I think for a long time, you know, people that tattooed, you know, had other backgrounds that they came from and did other things, you know. They were butchers or mailmen or mechanics or, you know, whatever else. And I think that there's this like certain kind of personality that gets attracted to tattooing, you know, like you said, you know, a lot of the older guys being carnies, like fucking weirdos that came from backgrounds that, you know, were atypical, you know, more so. And I think it's just fucking weird. You phrased it best, Nick, the sterilization of tattooers. You know, it's like, when did you guys become fucking squares that like don't like to have fun, that want to be taken so seriously? I don't know. I feel like I'm just ranting at this point, but it's just goofy, man. Like, don't take yourself so seriously. Have fun. Like, that's the whole fucking point of life. I mean, in tattooing, we get to have like the most fun ever. That's like the whole job.
Yeah, I mean, I kind of have come up with a term for them. I don't know if I think you know, I don't see anybody else really using it. But Lyle Tuttle actually had a term, famously the black t-shirt kids. I'm pretty sure that was Lyle Tuttle that was always talking about, oh, all these new tattoo artists just always wearing black t-shirts. You're wearing one right now, actually. Just, you know, black t-shirt kids. But I kind of have recently, like, you know, I call the extension of that the red flannel dudes, the red flannel trad guys that are, you know, very like that, like you said, very they themselves consider them outsiders, but you got to fit into what they think is cool. And I think that's kind of been pretty contradictory to what a lot of what tattooing is about. But
yeah, that's so oxymoronic.
They're so anti-click. They're a click.
Exactly. And yeah, they all hang out, and there is like a kind of an unspoken or unseen, like, cool trad guy group. They all follow each other. They all like each other's work. They all fucking shop at the same stores to get the different color flannels. They all wear the same little beanie halfway slouched on their head, and they have like some little fucking mustache, and they all love Harley Davidson. I don't know. It's they're all like the same fucking person. It's hard to describe. I don't know. I'm a hater. I'm on my hater shit right now.
Oh, dude, I drink the haterade with you.
But that's a fair opinion to have, though, because, like, you know, again, when I first started tattooing, the thing that I loved about it was because it was for the misfits and the outcasts and the people that didn't belong, and it's really turned into conformists.
Yeah,
you know, like you said, it's funny to say the red flannel crew. Like, that's hilarious because it's true. Which, you know, and the thing here's to not to be super negative. You know, I'm at a point where I kind of just don't give a shit what everyone else is doing. If they want to fucking cuff their fucking pants and wear fucking you know, work boots and, you know, look like a blue collar guy that they're whatever, man. You want to look like you're from the 50s? That's fucking cool. I don't care. Just don't be a dick. That's kind of what I think about. Like, just be supportive and be positive and be kind. Like, I truly don't care what anyone else does, because I'm really more, I'm at a point in my life where I'm focusing on me, and I just want to do me. I'm going back to like the fuck you society. I'm going to do what I want to do. I don't know if you guys have ever, if you ever seen any of my work, Nick, it's pretty different.
Oh, yeah, I'm familiar with your stuff. I remember you were at the Lyle Tuttle retrospective, I believe.
I was, yeah. Yeah, I've known Lyle for quite a while.
Yeah. Was I right about the black t-shirt thing? That was his thing, right?
There are so many things that he said. It sounds like something he would say, though, for sure.
Yeah.
But go ahead.
I was going to say, I don't know if it was him or Zeke Owen that had coined that term, black t-shirt kid. But it was a term, you know, that was coined by one of them to describe the newer generation of tattooers. And this was probably late 90s, early 2000s. So like I said, the red flannel dude is just the next evolution of that.
Right. This is a little bit jumping subjects, but it's kind of not really. I read that article that you wrote in what magazine was that, or what article? Anyway, you talked about George Furchette was one of your big influences. I was wondering, I helped set up the show in New York where it was all his original stuff. So like
Danielle.
So, yeah. Okay. I didn't know. I wasn't sure if you knew Danielle or not.
Yeah.
But yeah, we got to handle like boxes and boxes of stuff to set it out. And like, it kind of sucks that you weren't there. Cause it was pretty amazing. If you're a George Furchette fan.
I had even bought a hotel room at the manor that it was at, the, you know, cause it was, in Cornwall, New York, I want to say.
Yes.
And Danielle had reached out to me maybe a month or two prior. And she was like, "Hey, I'm doing this thing. I know this is like right up your alley. I'm just trying to get a head count. We're going to be, you know, having the rooms available. Would you be interested?" And I was like, "Of course. Yeah, that sounds fantastic." And I, you know, prepaid a room, and then life caught up to me. And the weekend that it happened, I just wasn't able to make it out, but, it seemed to have gone off without a hitch. And I told Danielle, like, you know, don't even worry about the room. Just, you know, have fun, and I hope everything goes good. But yeah, it was super cool. I didn't get to go, but I did get to see a lot of the stuff that was on display. And yeah, like how much Burchett material has survived, you know, just thanks to Lyle Tuttle making one purchase
right. All
the time ago.
Right.
So much just from
one. I know the amount of that Danielle brought, we only showed maybe an eighth of it. And we got to dig through almost all of it. And like, it was so cool to be able to just handle that stuff with your bare hands and just like, holy shit, you know? So I really get into that stuff. It was like, I kind of wish you would have been there. I think you would have loved it. It sucks that you couldn't make it.
You know, it's crazy. The more I handle and deal with old tattoo stuff, particularly that early on, you know, for anybody who's watching right now, we're talking about a tattoo artist that roughly started tattooing right around the turn of the early 1900s, turn of the century. But dealing with stuff from that time period, one thing that always strikes me is how much we still have in common with tattoo artists from back then. You know, I was tattooing somebody the other day, and I used like old style machines, and they were like, "Man, your machine is like super like old school. Like, when did they start using like machines like this? Like what, like the 70s? And I'm like, "No, like, dude, this is like, this machine is an exact replica of one from like 1908. And they're like, "Wait, what?" And they're like, "How has tattooing been like the way it is?" And I'm like, "I mean, honestly, man, we are not, you know, particularly in the way that I tattoo, it's not that different than how it was 100 years ago." So,
no.
You know, whenever I was putting together the Clark book, and, you know, I was going through J.T. Clark's collection, just finding little scraps of paper where, you know, he fucked something up, and he, like, it was just perfect, because it's like, man, he did exactly what I would have done with it. Or he had this one photo of a butterfly on this leg that he did, and at the bottom of the photo, he wrote in pen, along the lines of, "This isn't the best photo. The tattoo looks better in person," which is the exact caption a modern day tattoo artist would put for a photo of a tattoo that he didn't think was that great. You know, he's like, hey, guys, I did this butterfly today. Not the best photo. And it's like, that was in like 1918. Tattoo artists excusing, you know, photography as like, hey, guys, trust me, this looks better than the fucking photo, I promise. It was so modern, and it really like brought humanity to him, where it's like he's dealing with the same shit 100 years later. Tattoo artists are still dealing with the same shit, which is photographs cannot capture the way tattoos look,
right?
And even with how far advanced our photo technology has come, so it's just funny little stuff like that. I love.
Yeah, dude, I was. You know, obviously being still pretty green in this, like as I go through my tattooing journey, I learn more and more about the history of it. And an old head had put me on to Ben Corday last year. And I was so surprised at how modern looking Ben Corday's flash was for being, you know, from the era that it was from, the 20s and shit. I was like, yeah. What? Oh my God, like this looks like something my mentor would have done, you know, or, you know, somebody else on Instagram I would see doing it. And obviously I know a lot of it is like callbacks, in ways what you see today, but it surprised me. I was like, wow, this is really modern looking.
Well, you know, Ben Corday wasn't so concerned about making his flash look like tattoo flash. He was more concerned with just making good art, and good art is always going to be good art, whether it was a good piece of art in the early 1900s or now. So I think his stuff almost has a timeless look to it, because, you know, and this is just me speaking on, you know, interpreting his art from my own perspective. But his stuff has that timeless look because he wasn't caught up so much with the trends of tattoo flash in his time period, you know? Yeah. So he wasn't, and I'm stumbling over my words here, but yeah, he wasn't caught up. And I think that's why his stuff looks as classic as it does.
Yeah, totally. That makes sense. That's, you worded that perfectly for sure. And, you know, I think I've always kind of had more of an attraction to stuff kind of like that. Like I am a huge Ed Hardy fan, which, you know, people that aren't tattooers find really fucking weird. They're like the Walmart brand Ed Hardy. I'm like, oh my fucking God, no. And I read his book a couple of years back, and I was, you know, I loved the fact that, you know, after a certain point, he was like, I'm fucking tired of doing 150 hot stuffs a day. I'm going to draw some shit. I'm just going to paint and fucking see where it goes. And then boom, here we are. We were gifted, you know, custom tattooing from that, which is crazy.
Yeah. Ed Hardy's a interesting one because he is, everything that I know about him is the ideal pinnacle of what a lot of tattoo artists bitch about nowadays, particularly like these older generation tattoo artists that are upset about, you know, they're always bitching about the young art kids, but then they will praise the fuck out of Ed Hardy. And it's like, well, if you put Ed Hardy in modern day times, he would just be just like the rest of them, using the pen, using iPad, using, you know. So it is funny, kind of the juxtaposition, I guess you could say.
Yeah, totally. And it's funny that you mentioned the art kid thing and how people, older heads, can kind of complain about it. You know, I feel like a lot of the like art kids that I've met in tattooing, specifically people that have like kind of gotten in around the same time as me, a lot of them fucking crush. They just kill in so many ways. And I'm just a preface. I, before becoming a tattooer, didn't like really draw much. I mean, I did a little bit growing up, but it was never something I actively pursued. I was a music kid. So I kind of lack that background in ways, which has made it so much more interesting to hyper focus on things like that today as an adult. I love learning about, you know, color theory and dimension and, you know, planes on objects and shadows, whatever. It's interesting to me now, but as someone
cool.
Who doesn't
go ahead.
I was just
cool part. I say the cool part about that is that doesn't end.
Yeah,
I've been doing this for 30 years, and I still get excited about a new trick, a new flair, because I was a bass player before I became an artist. So I was into music before as well. And I compare it to, you learn how to play bass, because I'm a bass player, you learn the basics, and then you start adding attitude to it. Then you start adding your own flavor. And it's the same thing with art, for me anyway. You know, you learn the basics, you learn the fundamentals, and then you can play with it. And it's so fun, you know. For me, I mean, you know how I work, Mike. I draw all the time because I love it. I love it. I'm so fortunate to be in an industry, in a business where I'm still excited. I'm still excited about drawing stuff and coming up with stuff. And I guess I'm on a quest to do something original, which is really fucking hard.
Yeah. It's been difficult trying to figure out what the next breakthrough in tattooing is.
Right.
You know, I think there's been a couple, and this is, you know, not even really an important conversational topic. I'm just spitballing right now, but throughout the history of tattooing, there's been some really significant breakthroughs, whether it be the breakthrough of electrical tattooing, whether it be the breakthrough of artistic tattooing, or whether it be the breakthrough of medical grade sterile tattooing. You know, all three of those had their own kind of, like, every time one of those things popped onto the scene, it really, like, kind of revolutionized the industry. And I think, me personally, I think the next revolutionary breakthrough is painless tattooing, like true painless tattooing. And, you know, we're in the infancy stage of that right now with, you know, the anesthesia tattooing. And I know that's a hot topic. Some people are for it, some people are against it. But I think in 100 years, you know, I think that's going to be a thing where you could walk into any shop and have a completely pain-free experience, the same way we now have, you know, for the most part, pain-free experiences at the dentist or whatever. I think that's going to be our next major revolutionary breakthrough in tattooing. I hope, at least, because I hate getting tattooed because it hurts.
Yeah, I fucking hate getting tattooed. Oh, yeah.
But
I can say I would do it if I could.
Look at whether or not you're upset about the anesthesia in, you know, tattooing celebrities nowadays. Look at what is actually being accomplished because of it. And then think, well, if this is just in the infancy, imagine when we start to really understand, you know, 20, 30 years down the road, the process of being put under to be tattooed, what your body can handle, you know. And I think we'll see some real masterpieces be done in that time, you know.
Yeah, I could totally see that. See, that I'm glad that that's going to be after my time in getting tattooed, because I fucking love getting high way too much for that. I would want to be getting tattooed all the time because it's awesome getting put under. Just to clarify, I just had a fuck ton of surgeries like 3 months ago because I got hit by a box truck. So I have a newfound love for just hanging out with the docs before going in. And, you know, they gave me the fucking little sleepy gas, and I'm an addict, so that's why I like that. But anyways,
yeah, it's crazy, man. That's something that is unfathomable, and it is something that is only available to celebrities right now because it is so expensive and it is such a process. But I think there'll be a way where we can you know, obviously cheapen it and make it more widely available. Because, like, look, dude, like the girl that comes in that wants, you know, her dog's name and paw print on her wrist, she's not in it for the ritual pain that a lot of tattooing is. She just wants to get a sweet little memento. And I don't want to have to put her in any unnecessary pain and then be like, you need to earn this paw print and dog name. Like, it's like, come on, man. Like, that's not her gig. She just wants to remember her dog that died.
Yeah.
So if there's a way I can help her out, I think I'd choose to help her out.
My concern with that is I would be more okay with it if it was safer. Because anytime you're put under or with any kind of real anesthesia, there's risk of dying. So it's, you know, and I do have that old school attitude of like, you should kind of earn it because it's supposed to be painful, you know, but
yeah. Well, that's the thing. That's something that, like you said, the safety of it, the health precautions of it. I think that's something that we definitely will be worked on, and, it'll be interesting to see where it goes in, you know, 30 fucking years. But yeah, it's crazy, like, to think about what is next in tattooing, like what's on the horizon for tattooing now. And I think some people have a very bleak outlook on it, and they're like, tattooing is over and it's just all downhill from here. And I think it's easy to have that perspective. But it's also, if you just shift it a little bit, you can have a better perspective and maybe be a little bit more hopeful. It depends on how you want to look at it. That's in any situation though.
Right.
Yeah. I don't think
tattooing is going anywhere. No, if anything, it'll become uncool again, and then I'll love it even more.
Yeah. No, tattooing doesn't go any fucking where. It never will. I mean, tattooing has been around since, you know, humans have been around damn near. Which is so funny, because every time I get tattooed, and this kind of plays into the pain aspect of it, every time I get tattooed, I get really nervous for my job, because I'm like, if people find out this is how bad it hurts, nobody's going to want to get tattooed anymore. You know, I'm like, holy shit, dude, we need to keep this shit secret, because I would not, you know, actively get tattooed if it felt like this all the time.
It's been 8 years since I've gotten tattooed. And there's a reason.
What? 8 years?
Yep. 8 years. My last tattoo was by Gilmani on my shin.
Wow.
5 hours of Gil the Drillmani on my shin. And he earned that title or that nickname.
One of my buddies.
I haven't gotten any tattoos, you know, longer than 10 minutes in years. Everything I've gotten in the last 5 years has been 10 minutes or less. I don't know how I have as many as I do. I was young. You know, the older you get, the more shitty your pain tolerance is.
Dude, when you're young, you're all hardcore about it. Like, fuck yeah, I sat for 7 hours. Now it's just like, after an hour, and you're like, hey, just shade it another day. Let's just color it another day.
And then that other day never comes around, and you have an outline for the rest of your life. That's my whole sleeve is just outlined, and it will always stay just outlined.
We're not really selling tattooing that much on this podcast. Like, yeah, fuck, it sucks. It hurts. I love it, but yeah, it's not the most comfortable. and you know, I think you're right. If we could make it a little more easier for the general public, I think we'd still be busier. But I'm just concerned about the safety of it. You know, there's a guarantee that, like, you can get put under for, you know, 8-10 hours and not wake up, or just not wake up, then I'd kind of be a little more for it.
For sure.
Yeah. No, that's totally fair. I do get the whole thing of, like, just wanting to make it easier for people, though. I mean, in a similar note, but not exactly the same note, I remember a buddy of mine from Green Bay telling me once, we were kind of talking about like the rock star mentality that some people have in tattooing, and he mentioned to me once, which has stuck with me, that, you know, somebody coming in to get tattooed is, you know, to you, it's just something that you might not want to do, that you're going to forget about as soon as they leave. But, like, to them, that's, you know, they've been waiting, you know, 2-3 weeks, 2-3 months. That's, you know, X right. amount of hours of working, or this amount of budgeting. You know, to them, it's a whole experience that means something different to them than to you. And, you know, I can, you know, having the integrity to really, you know, treat each person with equanimity in that sense, I think, is important, and something that's, you know, like I said, stuck with me since hearing that.
Yeah, I mean, I'm always reminded that every Saturday night I do walk-ins, and I'm like, oh, what are you guys doing tonight? Like, what are the plans for the night? And they're like, this. this is the big thing of the night. And I'm like, what? This is your night? You're just paying to get like, I was like, oh my God, I could never be your friend. If my friend literally was like, hey man, do you want to go spend money and get put in pain for like 10 seconds? I'd be like, no, fuck that, dude. But for people, like you said, this really is, for me, it is a 5-minute interaction that I will forget about. But for them, they're going to remember it. And like you said, it is super important to kind of take that into consideration and to be, and to not treat it like the passing event in your life that it may be, but instead treat it as this big grand memory that it's going to be for them.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. Forever.
Yeah. I have to remind myself of that a lot, that, you know, just cause I've been doing it for, you know, decades, and it's kind of lost its excitement for me, that people are coming, getting the little small stuff like the paw print and stuff like that. It means the world to them, you know? And I try to remind myself of that a lot when I'm doing walk-ins. It's like, this seems a little silly and not important to me, but to this person, this is a big deal, you know? And it's I don't know if this, I'm humbling the word. I don't know if that's the right word.
Yeah. Yeah.
But it's like, you know, you know, I remember being, you know, 17, I got my first, I was so excited about it. And now it's just like, it's this old hat. And it's kind of sad. I wish that excitement was back, but I don't think we can ever get that back. But we can be aware and take care of the clients and know that they're there and it's exciting for them. You guys get what I'm saying.
Yeah.
My dog is kind of distracting me.
You're good.
Relax, buddy.
To change gears up a little bit, I'm curious, Nick, since you started tattooing so young, and, you know, maybe I feel like maybe at 15, we don't really have a lifestyle established much, but like, what kind of influence on your lifestyle did tattooing end up having, being it, you know, coming into your life at such a young age?
Well, prior to tattooing, my whole concern in life was being as goth and edgy as possible. And then when I got into tattooing, I didn't give a fuck about anything but tattooing. And it took over everything. I stopped dressing goth and alternative. I started just focusing on only tattooing. And all my money went into buying tattoo equipment and tattoo machines rather than buying, at the time, trip pants and platform boots and whatever the fuck. And it was like that for a very long time. And only these past couple years have I started to really re-explore my past passions, whether it be a passion for alternative fashion, or, you know, other stuff such as Adidas or anything that isn't tattooing. And not to say that I've fallen out of love with tattooing, but after so many years of just eating, breathing, sleeping, tattooing 24/7, especially with like the history stuff, it does, you know, you get a little tired, it gets a little stale, and you kind of find yourself wandering outside of tattooing. You know, a perfect example, when I was younger, like 21, 22, you know, peak tattoo, and, you know, I was in love with tattooing at the most at that point. Whenever I would go out of town and I would go to a new city, I only did one of two things. I checked out the tattoo shops that were there, and I checked out the antique shops that were there. And I would only check out the antique shops because I would hope I would find some kind of tattoo artifact, which I never did. But now when I go to a new city, I don't go to any of the fucking tattoo shops unless it's like a buddy shop that I know, and I might pop in for like 15 minutes. But I go look at the mall. I go to the restaurants. I go to the aquarium. I do everything that isn't tattoo related. And that's just where I'm at right now. And in 10 years, I might be back on my tattoo bullshit, where all I want to do is hang around tattoo shops. And when I'm done with my appointment, I want to go to my buddy shop, and everything will be back to tattooing, and I won't give a shit about anything else.
Yeah. Fuck yeah. That's awesome. I mean, I, to embrace the things that were so like integral in who you were as a person before tattooing, and really leaning into that hard. That's sick.
Yeah, I look back at those days. I was very productive. I got a lot of my tattoo history research done in that time period, and I was able to kind of, that was really where I built this Professor York persona and character that I've kind of had and all that fun stuff. So I'm very fortunate that I was so obsessed with tattooing at that time in my life that I was able to basically create a permanent identity around it. Like, people know me for being into tattoo history and doing all this shit. And it's because I went so hard with it, you know, in my early, 20s, late teens.
Yeah. Yeah. And it shows in everything that you do. I mean, and the kind of stuff that you pull out and you recreate is super sick to see. I mean, being someone who's, only a handful of years in, there's a lot of stuff that I've discovered, really trying to pay attention to the work that you do and other people do, bringing back things that were a part of tradition, that span, 100 years ago.
Yeah, I mean, there's nothing cooler as far as a concept, in my opinion, than finding an old tattoo design that literally hasn't been done in over 100 years. I get really sentimental, but I tend to personify things and personify objects. And, I look at like an old rose from a sheet of obscure tattoo flash from 1905. When that rose was painted, it was beautiful and it was the fucking talk of the town. And every sailor that came in wanted that fucking rose. Oh man, that rose was the shit. Well, then, a couple years later, everybody's had that rose. Oh, that's the rose my mom got tattooed on her. I want something new. A new set of flash came out with new, cooler, better roses. And that one got taken off the wall and shoved in a box. And then 100 years later, a tattoo historian, finds it and posts it online for us to see. And it's like, this was a fucking beauty of its heyday, but now it's just some old, dingy, forgotten thing. And I feel bad for it, and I feel sad, and I want to give it its new life, and I want to pay the respect that it deserves, because it really served its community well for so long. And my best way of paying it that respect is to redo it, put a new coat of paint on it, and really like do it how it should have been done, and give it that proper makeover. And that way it can continue on for the next 100 years, because in 100 years, these people will be retattooing the same rose design from 1905, but they're not referencing the 1905 version. They're referencing my version, but at the end of the day, it's still getting carried on,
Yeah. Yeah. That's wonderful. I mean, that's a great outlook.
I never thought of it. Right.
You know what's funny? Somebody actually brought up a counterpoint, which is I think it was my buddy Justin who had asked me, but he was like, because you see all this flash from back then, there's all these sheets and there's like 10 designs to pick on. Do you think there was ever something that was painted that just was never tattooed? Because we all draw drawings that we would love to tattoo one day and nobody gets it. And you're like, ah, fuck it, whatever, nobody got this. But there has got to be old flash from the early 1900s that nobody ever got. Because, I'll tattoo an old design and I'll say, this hasn't been tattooed in well over 100 years. But I actually don't know if it was even tattooed back then. we don't know that.
Right. Yeah.
So
yeah.
It's a funny concept to think maybe like that there are literally unused brand new designs from 100 years ago that have not once been put on human skin. I think that's an interesting concept.
Yeah, that's funny. I was thinking something along those lines recently too, and that is such a crazy, I mean, statistically speaking, there has to be you know, hundreds and hundreds of designs, if not thousands, that haven't been done.
Oh, yeah, for sure. I mean, there are some really weirdo designs, and I don't know. I love it. I'm a design enthusiast. You know, there's a lot of tattoo historians that collect machines, or they collect, you know, I collect photos as well, or they collect business cards, but I love designs, and I am, you know, obviously a tattoo artist. So designs are particularly valuable to me, because there's a lot of tattoo historians that are just that, tattoo historians. They're not tattoo artists. So they collect machines, but they can't use them because they're not tattoo artists. But with designs, I can actually fucking use them, and I can actually, I get to say, okay, we're bringing this back to life. You know, this, we are now submitting this into the tattoo lexicon. And I am a tattoo artist, so I have the privilege and the responsibility and duty to say that, you know? So I think that's a really cool concept.
Yeah, totally.
I agree.
I feel similarly too. A lot of my old coworkers at the last shop that I worked at had, one in particular, he gifted me like a Cap Coleman book, gifted me like a Jerry book. And those two, for the first few months that I had them, I mean, just every day, man, just going through them. And a lot of the like Cap Coleman designs too, in particular, I'm like, man, there are so many amazing artists that I love that are like, you know, modern day artists that I see, like, I'm realizing now, oh, wow, these are Coleman designs that these guys are doing a lot of times. And they're throwing their own spins on them. They're doing something cool. And I'm like, wow, this shit is, you know, classic for a reason, you know? And, I think it's really cool to think of, you know, how many things really have been passed on through the years just from, you know, somebody caring enough to want to document that and carry that around with them, you know, year to year.
Yeah. I mean, that's why I have the absolute utmost respect for Lyle Tuttle. I got to meet him very briefly at the retrospective, and I just asked him as many questions as I could, but you know, I think now his legacy is finally kind of starting to be understood, but he did so much for preserving the history of tattooing. I don't think anybody else will be able to really do that and to make the contributions that he did as such significant contributions, you know? And I think we were really lucky to have that. And that's fucking awesome. And I just hope one day that I myself or even a peer of mine could you know, also do that, do something such as help preserve tattooing in a similar manner.
Yeah. Yeah. Every time I've spoken publicly about my experience in tattooing, like through like a post or something that isn't, you know, a tattoo, I always try to include like, man, like there's so much work that I and, you know, everybody has to do to try and give back to tattooing in the best way possible, you know, because obviously it gives us everything, you know, it gives us the means to live the life that we want and, you know, in ways gives us our life force. And I think personally, I mean, you're doing a great job of giving back. I mean, my mentor put me under your work, I guess, just to contextualize that a little bit and seeing it in my own way after, you know, digging into, you know, the work that you have online. I think it's awesome what you do.
I appreciate it. I really do. I every time I receive, you know, compliments about my work and, you know, especially from another tattoo artist, it really does mean a lot to me. You know, it's so easy nowadays, you know, to kind of like, ah, thanks, wave, goodbye. But no, it really does mean a lot. And I'm glad that people are recognizing the importance of everything that I try to do online. And I'm not talking about, you know, the stupid fucking dumb mean photos or here I am dressed up as a ghost, but no, the other stuff that I think is actually more important. But me dressing up as a ghost is kind of funny. So
hard agree. I love it. Like I said, great look. So I'm curious, just because obviously I know you're a fan of like heavier music. I'm a fan of heavier music. We're in like a similar age range. And I was wondering, when you were younger getting into tattooing, did the kind of music that you were into and your involvement with music like influence your art or your approach to art in any way?
Not at all. Just like you, I didn't start drawing until I had started tattooing. I taught myself how to draw because I quickly realized, well, if I'm going to be a tattoo artist, knowing how to draw is going to greatly help improve my tattooing, and it's going to make this job a lot easier. So I should probably learn how to draw, which is actually why I only draw tattoo designs. Like if you asked me to draw a landscape, I'd be fucked. But I could draw a good tattoo. But anyways, the music I was listening to didn't really have a play in that at all. Particularly because the style I do, traditional, is really popular amongst hardcore kids and in the hardcore scene, which is funny because I am straight edge, which is directly from the hardcore scene. But when I started tattooing, I wasn't listening to hardcore that much. I got into hardcore shortly after I started tattooing. And I would go to hardcore shows and I would see traditional tattoos on all these kids that I was going to these shows with. But I actually didn't like traditional at the time. And I actually didn't like those kids. I thought hardcore kids were fucking annoying and obnoxious, and they are. That hasn't changed. And they're all covered in traditional tattoos. And at the time, I fucking hated traditional. I thought it was an easy cop-out style. And I was doing, at the time, new school and neo-traditional. And that wasn't popular amongst the musicians I listened to.
Interesting. Yeah, I mean, that does make sense, though. Just kind of like the timing of when you got into hardcore and the fact that you were already kind of, you know, you were already well into your way of tattooing at that point. But yeah, I was curious, I guess, just, you know, like I said, being in a similar age bracket and, you know, having been around similar scenes. But that makes me feel a lot better that you also didn't start drawing until you became an apprentice. And I, too, am a giant enthusiast of redrawing Flash because I know how to, again, like you said, I know how to make a good tattoo. And I can make art kind of, but I fucking love tattoo imagery. It's what I love. That's what drives me. So that makes me feel a lot better.
And I think it's amusing that you say you didn't like American traditional, Nick, because I never liked it until COVID shut me down. And I really threw myself at like redrawing and learning and being able to do American traditional just because I wanted to understand it. I want to understand what the appeal was. And now I like it more now that I can do it. Because I don't know, I guess I did things kind of backwards. I always drew, but I drew like 90s biker style tattoos as a kid because, you know, I'm old. And, you know, now that I've been tattooing for long, I always got frustrated. Like, why everybody loved this old school stuff? And I don't know. I threw myself at it a couple of years ago, and I really appreciate it. But again, if you look at my work, I don't even know if I have a style yet. My skulls, you can tell, are my skulls. That's, I think, the only thing that really stands out to me. That I like, I draw so much shit and it's all different. Just because, again, it goes back to like being a bass player. When I was a young bass player, I wanted to be able to play a bunch of different styles. So I don't know.
No, it's yeah, I think traditional is an acquired taste. And, you know, when I watch these interviews that like Vice does or anything where they're taking tattooing and bringing it to the mainstream audience, people that maybe don't have a tattoo or never will have a tattoo, and they show people traditional tattooing, and I see these people talking shit about traditional, I don't get mad. I'm like, oh, you just haven't acquired the taste yet, because I didn't acquire it, and I'm a fucking tattoo artist. It took me, I think I really started selling, I started really understanding traditional at about like 4 years into tattooing. But prior to that, I didn't give a fuck about the style, or it just was all so ugly to me. Like, I remember I love Lou Alberts. Lou Alberts is one of my favorite, you know, tattoo artists from back in the day. But the first time I ever saw Lou Alberts tattoo flash, my buddy Ivan Antonishev, he had the book and he was showing it to me in Austin. And I was like, this is the ugliest flash I've ever seen. And he's like, no, man, this shit's so fucking cool. Like, look at it. And I was like, are we looking at the same fucking thing here? Because this shit looks like shit. But now I love every design in that book. And it's the one that Ed Hardy put out. And I want to tattoo every design in that book exactly as it is. I don't want to fix it up at all. And I think it just took me a while to appreciate it and to acquire that taste. And especially knowing what I know now about Lou Alberts, knowing his history, knowing how early he was doing it, knowing everything else, it really puts a weird spin on his artwork. And you look at his shit so differently when you like know that. You're like, whoa, that's kind of weird that his shit looks like this.
Right. It's amazing. What's old to us was cutting edge at one time. It was completely new. And now, I'm so excited about art at this point in my life. I've always been excited with art, but more now than ever, because I built my life around being able to, like, I tattoo enough where I can sit and paint for days on end. Yeah. And like exploring flash and doing different kinds of stuff and trying to paint that stuff that's not flash. I don't know. I'm trying to think of who the tattoo artist that inspired me with as flash artists. God, Ed Lee, his twisted shit. Always liked his stuff. Old Jack Rudy stuff, old Corey Miller stuff, Judy Parker. I mean, fuck, how can you not talk about old flash that just was brilliant and made you paid my rent more than once. It was Judy Parker stuff, you know, and, you know, stuff like that. But that was all like 90s, you know, late 80s, early 90s stuff, you know, Gilmani skulls. I took a deep dive into Lyle Tuttle's stuff when COVID hit and I was shut down. And I remember him telling me, he's like, yeah, I'm not the best artist, but, you know, I can do a good tattoo. I'm like, oh, that's cool.
I love that. Yeah.
My favorite advice that he ever gave me was when you draw your flash, don't do it as good as you can tattoo it. Cause when the people look at the tattoo, they're like, oh my God, you made mine so much better. And I'm like, it's such good advice. But I don't seem to do that with my paintings. I'm a perfectionist. So I really try to like push perfection.
Yeah, I was about to say, I do the opposite. My paintings are always better than my tattoos.
if we ever meet up someday, I took screenshots of it. It was about a week before Lyle died. He sent me a shit ton of text in length because one of the last conversations we had is I was going to go out to Ukai and we were going to paint together. I wanted to do some flash with him, but you know, he passed away. But about a week before he passed away, he sent me detailed texts of what he used, the equipment he used, the paints he used, how he did stuff. And I'm just like, I get goosebumps thinking about it. Cause it's like, holy shit, dude, this legend is taking the time to share that info with me because he knew I wanted to come out and just hang out and do some art with him. And he knew he was passing away. He knew he was dying, which, you know, out of all the people that have died in my life, Lyle's the one that really, like, I think I cried for a couple of days. You know, he was a big influence on my life. I mean, how many people get to meet your childhood hero that inspired you to be who you are and become really close friends?
Yeah.
You know, I feel so fortunate. And I don't know. My goal, and the rest of my life is going to be an art adventure. I want to travel. I want to do art with people that I just want to learn. You know, and I guess that's my way of continuing the tradition of flash and stuff like that. It's like I want to create something new. If that makes any sense. I don't know.
It's funny on the note of Nick, you mentioning, you know, traditional being an acquired taste. I get super stoked when I go anywhere and people are like jacked on traditional. Cause when I go and I do conventions, I just cut out flash pieces and I toss them down. and You know, I feel like it really is just such an acquired taste, and I'm from Racine, Wisconsin. I'm right between Milwaukee and Chicago, and around here, you know, the big thing is like black and gray. So when I got into tattooing and I was brought in under a traditional style tattooer, an American traditional style tattooer, you know, a big uphill thing was trying to find people that were willing to get those pieces so I could like try them out and reflect on them and, you know, try and learn from them. And Now I've seen such a growth in the last few years of people around here really wanting to get American traditional style imagery. And I think it's so cool. And something that my mentor had said to me just a couple of months back, which was, you know, one of the most treasured things he's ever said to me, was like, "Hey dude, like, it's crazy. Like, I've gone out to restaurants and seen people with your tattoos, and I can tell that they're your tattoos. Like, I can tell you're, because in the area there's really only a handful of traditional guys." And he's like, "You know, I can pick yours out from the crowd." And I think that is such a cool thing to hear, and also think about the resurgence of that just being, you know, a thing in the area in general. Because certain cities, like you go to, like, I've done Des Moines, and people in Des Moines fucking love traditional style. People in Cleveland fucking love traditional style tattoos. But to really see it, you know, thrive in an area that I, you know, is such a foreign concept to the people of, I think it's cool to see that coming back and see that, you know, being a standard in tattooing again.
Yeah, you know, it's so weird how it seems very city-centric. You know, so for example, Austin is a big traditional city. Not so much Dallas. New York is a big traditional city. There's just these little pockets in cities around the country that are really, you know, known for having these amazing traditional tattoo artists. And I really think that's all it comes down to, man, is what is in your city. If all your city has are amazing black and gray tattooers, then that's probably going to be the predominant style of the city. But if you've got a bunch of killer ass traditional artists, you know, I think of like Indianapolis. My buddy Luke tattoos there. You wouldn't think that it's like some crazy traditional city, but there are some amazing traditional artists. Luke, Taylor, my buddy Ivan, he's from there. There's like these really fucking killer traditional artists, and they're like carving out a scene for traditional tattooing there. And it's really cool to see that, man, 20 years ago, maybe traditional tattoos in Indianapolis were not very common, but because of how fucking dope these guys are, everybody's like, dude, that's actually really good looking stuff. And like I said, they've carved out a niche, and they're in that city. And I don't think I'm doing that quite with Dallas, because there's not enough of me. Maybe if there was like a couple other cats in Dallas that were doing the antique traditional style, then I could say Dallas is a hub for that style. But since it's just me, it is kind of hard to make it into a hub, but it's awesome, man. I just wanted to give like one last piece of advice to new tattooers. I get messaged a lot by new tattooers, and this kind of goes into what we were talking about, like traditional tattooing and style, and how can you get people to do the style that you want to do? And that's a common thing when you first start tattooing. You might have a lot of people that want to get tattooed by you, but they don't want the style that you want to do. And it can be difficult and a little challenging to like kind of push a style and to convince people to get it. But if you just like, to all those young tattooers that might be watching, I would definitely say just stick with it, keep developing your style, and just keep giving it away for free. I know that sounds counterproductive, but the more you do it, the more people see it. The more people see it, the more they're like, oh, this is what this guy does. I'm known for my antique style traditional, but just 5 years ago, I had to give it away for free, because while I'm known for it, nobody wanted to pay for it. So, you know, it just comes with time. And the only other little piece of advice, and I've said this before, but to reiterate, really like develop a style that helps you stand out, but you yourself should also stand out. And I'm not saying everybody has to dress up like a ghost on a fucking interview, but if you, in the meantime, while you're developing a style, because it doesn't come overnight, you got to do something to help yourself stand out. And if, unfortunately, you can't draw off the bat in a particularly unique way, well, something you can do to make yourself unique is you yourself be unique. So, I don't know, come up with a gimmick. Don't be afraid to be gimmicky. Gimmicky is a part of tattooing's history and tradition. And don't be afraid to stand out and give yourself a stupid name like fucking Professor and, you know, do whatever and kind of be a character, because if they don't like your style, they'll at least like you. So that's my advice.
That's great advice.
Yeah, that's awesome. And dude, thank you so much again for finding the time to sit down and hang out. It means a lot.
Of course. I appreciate it.